All right, so I was out at this spot on Saturday night, right? Fake Odell Beckham showed up. Fake Odell Beckham steez. His clothes steez is Odell Beckham. His hair is exactly Odell Beckham, except he was like 10 years older than Odell Beckham. I tried to take a picture of him, and I was trying to be slick. He looked at the camera like, yeah, you taking a picture of Odell Beckham. He's so fake Odell Beckham that a woman walked up to him in his face and said...
And said it to him.
And I quote, look at this fake Odell Beckham.
Oh, no.
And he was like, yeah, what's up? He was real cool about it. Because that's what you got to be when you fully commit to fake Odell Beckham.
That's a pretty good fake person to be at a club in New York.
Yeah, but right? it don't take long before they realize you are not Odell Beckham.
Good point.
Yeah. Apparently, Steph Curry doesn't appreciate anyone else being called MVP in his house.
Dude.
Though my 81-year-old father via text nominated J.R. Smith for Dummy of the Year, being named Game 1 MVP by fans at Oracle Arena was an adequate substitute. But Steph looked like a real MVP. Like the 2016 Steph, going for 33-7-8 with a finals record 9 threes. As a team, the Warriors couldn't miss. A reminder that the Cavs don't guard so much and that the Warriors are at their best when Steph is in control. So let's get started with this. When the Cavs have to face this Steph Curry, they got no chance. Am I wrong here?
No, you're not. And the knock on Oracle from my friends in the Bay is that Oracle doesn't really get down like it used to. You know, like every night, Bomani Jones, I don't know if you know this, every night used to be Filipino Heritage Night in the Bay Area. But, man, these billionaires love it when Steph Curry grabs the aux cord. And they love to dance to that. Man, no one loves Steph Curry like super rich dudes in Oracle love Steph Curry because he went and did in the fourth quarter last night what we've seen him do pretty historically in the third.
Yeah, but the thing with Steph, and they've been lighting up poor George Hill. Like, George Hill, Well, George Hill got off on that free throw because JR did the whole JR thing. But one thing, if we watch George Hill's career, George Hill's eyes get like this, like... Big times, you can see it all over him, even when he's playing well like he was in this game. They've been killing him defensively. He has been the weakest defender the Cavs have had, and when he gets caught on Steph Curry, they are just lighting him on fire. Once that happens, man, this is so open for everybody else. Like, I don't know, other than maybe, like, LeBron, yes, LeBron gets guys shots, he gets the ball where they need him. Steph gets dudes so wide open just because you have to guard him from the parking lot.
I was texting with Brandon Payne, Steph's trainer, who I really only text when something really bad is happening, like his ankles are falling apart, or when something good is happening, like last night. And he used a word that I think is a pejorative for many other shooters, which is, Steph is a rhythm shooter, right? Steph is a rhythm shooter, but his rhythm is unlike any others. Brandon used the term patiently aggressive. Right? Steph has this weird thing where when he gets going, he is unstoppable, but it needs to get him there first, right? He needs to get into that flow with his footwork and the spacing that you mentioned, but when he's there, there is no one like him in the history of the human race.
Well, also, the thing with him with 9-for-17 from three that is interesting is that Steph feels kind of held back by the Steve Kerr offense. He would like to shoot more. If you're going to let him put up 17 to get to the point of making 9,
yep.
Oh boy, this thing gets spooky, and then Steph then continues to trick all these children into believing that they can be that good.
You too can be a 6'3" son of a pro athlete.
Steph Curry, everything about Steph Curry looks like you can do this at home. You cannot do this at home. Like, he is so particularly and uniquely good at things that we all feel like we should be capable of doing. But it's almost like golf at this point. I mean, why can't I make this putt? It's just right there.
And you know what's interesting also is Kevin Durant watching a guy like Steph Curry on the night that KD is the most efficient KD and realizing, yeah, these billionaires still don't love me like that.
And you might work best as number two in these parts.
That is also fair. But I understand that every MVP debate is designed to self-destruct. I understand this because I did high school debate.
I kind of did.
And high school debate taught me at least two things. One, puberty is hard. And two, if two people can't agree on the basic definition of a word like valuable, the ensuing argument will be pointless. But I am not here to argue anymore, Bomani. I am here to offer a warning. If LeBron James is not the most valuable player in the NBA Finals, words are meaningless. LeBron is showing us that he is most valuable under any conceivable definition of the term. And he should win the award even if the Cavs get swept.
To come out the box, taking it just a little bit too far.
That's the first take part, America should come to expect.
The first part I totally related to is I did high school debate and all of that stuff, and I roll with your idea valuable because LeBron, you know, the argument of terms, all of that stuff. But you're not the MVP if you get swept. You're just not the MVP if you get swept. Now, you can get some theoretical argument. It's like the swing vote theory, right? Your vote only matters if it tips this whole thing
over, right?
He's the best player there is. This is a very Wilt Chamberlain sort of argument if we get down to the bottom of it, because you look at so much of what he does, and you cannot take away from the greatness of it. However, I have been brainwashed, just like everybody else, into the sports definition of valuable. And what is your value if you lose? And it's not your fault that you lost. It's just hard to make you the MVP. But not to the point of like 2015 Andre Iguodala Finals MVP or Kawhi Leonard Finals MVP that year.
But what if LeBron James has games like he had in Game 1 where it's 51-8-8 and they lose, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the problem, is that LeBron James... I feel like we have an opportunity here to do something that everybody in sports talks about, but no one ever has an actionable plan to execute, which is, how do we actually punish the Warriors for stacking the deck like they have? And to me, the only way to do it is by seizing on this award, which is, by the way, voted on by how many people? 11 people? 11 of our peers? I'm going for these swing votes, man. This is achievable. Like, LeBron James, you could argue, right? You mentioned when Iguodala won it. Iguodala won it because he held LeBron to like 35-plus and a triple-double, right? And Kevin Durant won it last year while LeBron James became the first person in NBA Finals history to actually average a straight-up triple-double. He is proving that he deserves this award based on the merits right now.
I get you. It's just hard to make that argument after Steph Curry probably had a better game yesterday.
Yeah,
whole thing. That's a tricky little
jingle. Jerry West,
tricky little jingle board to put together there. Nice, snatch that thing. So the Cavs are down 2-0, which isn't terribly surprising. But being competitive 7 of the 8 quarters played in Oakland, having a real chance to win Game 1, and not falling apart after JR's Nick Anderson moment, hey, man, it could have gone way worse. Yeah, moral victory is a minor league, but look on the court. Look in the box score. Look out for your favorite fledgling television show. I'm serious. These first two games should be encouraging for Cleveland. The Cavs absolutely can win this series. I do think they can, and it goes back to what I've been talking about for a while now with the Warriors, Pablo. After a while, these things get wobbly. These runs get wobbly. They're the same team. It's kind of how your favorite artist could put out a bad album, right? They're still the same person they happen to be, but these things get a little bit shaky. Did the Warriors really look that great in these games to make you feel like this is on the way to a sweep? I don't feel like that at all.
We are so reactionary as sports fans, as sports consumers, and I know that because at least I am reactionary. Because it does feel like we totally forgot what just happened in the Western Conference Finals. This team got pushed to 7 by a team that no one thought should have done as much to them. And we also just forgot kind of what happened in Game 1 of the series, where LeBron James made this all very complicated. So if the argument at bottom that you are making is LeBron has played the Warriors, the Cavs, I should say, have played the Warriors 3 times, and the Cavs have won 1 of them after being down 2-0, I don't think we should write off the Cavs based on that evidence alone.
Well, also, let's evaluate what Game 2 was. Like, if you wanted to make a very simple sort of thing that happened there,
yeah.
The Warriors made everything. The Cavs made nothing, right? And that game was competitive going into the end of the third quarter.
It was
a 10-point game, but the part I guess that's encouraging for you if you're Cleveland, the Warriors have been obliterating people in the third quarters. It's almost become cliche to talk about it, but you looked at it when the second quarter and the Cavs are getting that down to about 5, and then the lead stretched out even further, and you're like, oh, well, the third quarter's coming up next. The Cavs managed to weather that third quarter. They've weathered a lot of things that other teams have gotten knocked out by. Let's see how Game 3 goes.
It is disheartening, though, when JaVale McGee is 6-for-6 from the field and scores 12 points.
But I think they were like a 0 plus minus for the time.
Yeah, right, the net effect, but still, the emotional effect was profoundly negative for the Cavs. But the most compelling video from these last 2 days, it wasn't even aired on the TV broadcast. There is one specific clip I saw while semi-consciously scrolling through NBA Twitter on my couch after midnight. And I don't know if you've seen it out there in America already, but I don't really care, because Game 2 was cool and all, but this here is a rare window onto LeBron James after JR'd more than JR ever JR'd in Game 1. So Howie, please, can we roll this video that I want to present to the people? Okay, this is how it starts, and here is the huddle. LeBron James is inquiring the timeout situation. Ty Lue is informing him they had a timeout, and that is LeBron James reckoning with his existence. Yo. Yo.
Dude, the thing about it is, if you watch that whole clip, JR hits the bench. Nobody's talking to JR. And to be fair, nobody's talking to anybody.
No.
Everyone is just, what is there to say? Because nobody wants to hear, that's all right. Because it's not all right. It is the opposite of all right. So you got James Posey over there behind the bench, Damon Jones. None of those guys, they're not saying a single word. And then at the end of it, James Posey's like, all right, man, let's get into it. Let's get into it. Because you realize, oh, wow, there is more of the game. How the hell did this just happen?
The new character in this play is Ty Lue, because there have been whispers around the Cavs all year about how much LeBron did or didn't love Ty Lue. And, Bo, I have a question for you. Does this look like this man loves Ty Lue?
Here's the thing, though. I don't blame anybody for not calling a timeout. LeBron was in a position to call a timeout. It looked like he may have tried. But why I don't blame anybody for not calling a timeout? How long would it take you to realize under any circumstance that J.R. Smith wasn't thinking about shooting? When is the time ever before this that you saw J.R. Smith and he wasn't thinking about shooting? J.R.'s got the ball and he's open. Your assumption is that he is going to shoot. Just all of it, though, with LeBron, just like this. Are you sick? Oh, man. As terrible as this was, it's one of the most boneheaded plays it's ever been. We're all here for the jokes. Like, I feel like the beauty of social media in 2018 is that we have taken these things that the sports media otherwise would have gone way so hard and moralistic on and everything else, and we are wallowing in all the jokes. We are making the world a better place.
It is. This is a profoundly wonderful historical artifact. I want to put this in a time capsule so that people in the future look back on us and realize what we were about. But also, this is a bad omen, right? When all this wraps up, when this series wraps up and LeBron James makes his decision in July.
Yeah, but it's a good omen for right now. I don't think they're getting enough credit for the fact that we've seen teams fall apart over less. And they came out there and the fact that they're even talking to JR.
The press conference, they did a great job of putting on a polite face. Because that's not quite the same face we saw afterwards.
No. 2018 season has been the year of beef. Beef between the players and refs has made it hot on these hardwood streets. You like that?
I do.
Refs and replays have been a huge part of the finals. Half the crew of the show was at the house for game one, except for the dude who flaked.
I was sleepy.
And
I was tired.
And none of us knew that they could replay block charge calls. Everyone knows it's bad when we talk about the refs this much, except maybe not Adam Silver, as it's been reported that the NBA will experiment in Summer League with a coach's challenge flag that will stop play and send the rest of their lucky monitors. Because, of course, no opinion is more needed on these things than the most biased guy in the building. Come on, guys. The last thing the NBA needs is more reasons to go to replay.
A younger version of me would have profoundly disagreed with you, because a younger version of me was in favor of the robot revolution, in favor of accuracy.
Complicit.
I wanted accuracy.
In our own destruction.
But this is what I understand about our time that we live in now. Entertainment is more important than accuracy. And that may be uncomfortable for people to hear, but those are the stakes. And anything that ruins my entertainment experience, even if accuracy is the beneficiary, probably isn't worth it.
We're not here for accuracy, right? Like you say, like of these times that entertainment, when have we not been here for entertainment? We are always here for entertainment. Now, if you need to feel better about it because people don't feel comfortable.
I feel guilty about
it. Okay, it's the efficiency of this more than anything else, right? The idea that we're going to break down and stop for all these calls, you wind up finding questions that you didn't already know were there, because this replay can make things look all kinds of different ways depending upon what you're looking for, what you're catching on, everything else, right? This doesn't help what we're doing. Perfect. Enemy of good. It's cliche. It occasionally holds. And that's the point that I think we've reached, because we're getting to the end of these games and they're stopping for everything. It's because the refs don't feel confident enough that they'll be able to sustain what happens after the replay. So they go and cover their behinds by looking at these monitors. And we're just sitting there like, okay, it's the end of the game. Like free timeouts for everybody, basically, because everybody needs to check every call.
So the Cavs are super furious about the refs in this series. And they've talked about this in their locker room. Tristan Thompson groused about this and all that. But what the NBA, I think, should realize is something the NFL actually has realized, is that many existential things may threaten our business. But referee scandals isn't one of them. And the reason I can say that is because the NBA had a far more profound officiating corruption scandal. And no one cares. In fact, Scott Foster, one of the men involved in a tangential way with that scandal, is officiating the most high-profile conference finals that we have. So that's not the thing to worry about if the product is your concern.
In all of this, the blessing and curse of high definition. We can see too good.
Yes, we can. And I am a literal minister in the Church of Process. And this past weekend, it was hard not to see and hear my congregation in Philadelphia. They begged for an answer to a simple question. Why hasn't Sixers GM Brian Colangelo been fired yet? Everybody knows about his reported ties to five burner Twitter accounts. Woj has already confirmed talk of ties between the burners and Colangelo's wife, Barbara Bottini. But ownership has been conspicuously, worryingly silent over the weekend. So I would like to put this on the record, Bomani Jones, that even if he knew nothing, letting Brian Colangelo keep his job would be objectively insane.
Well, it's only insane in a world that we don't understand how it operates, right? Colangelo got a last name. Like, so much of this that's fascinating with him is like that second generation got to prove myself because he's so insecure and fighting every battle that he's ever had, right? Mm. But he does have that last name, so pushing him out isn't necessarily that easy. That being said, I have no idea how in the world he is not fired yet. Like, I know how he's not fired yet, but I don't understand how he's not fired yet.
Yeah, I think due legal diligence. They hired this law firm to go look into something that the internet had already solved days ago, allegedly. But the second thing is, yeah, the Colangelos are the first family of the NBA. Jerry Colangelo, head of Team USA, USA Basketball. And here's the problem, right? Because it really isn't up to us. We can make great arguments about the ethics of releasing information to your spouse and your responsibility to safeguard that information. But it really only matters what a couple people think. One of those people is Joel Embiid, another person is Ben Simmons, and the third person is LeBron James. And I assume you saw LeBron James
joking
over the weekend.
Yeah, he's joking.
Yeah, he's clowning Brian Colangelo in an answer about his own owner just because he can.
But here's the thing, you're talking about this legal diligence. I don't understand the legal diligence part of this at all. People get fired every day, B. Now, what happens is sometimes you fire them and you take the money back. But sometimes you just can't come back to work. Like, we can't take you out anymore. We can't bring you in front of company.
That's it.
People are laughing at us. But if we've learned anything about the Sixers over the course of the last 6 years, from the process on to now, the guys that are in charge of this operation are pretty indifferent to being laughed at.
But this is,
they don't, for whatever reason, they don't mind.
What I worry about is that they're indifferent to the wrong kinds of laughter. Like the laughter that comes with the confidence that you're doing something right versus the laughter that comes from the understanding that you're backing a dude who can't do his job effectively.
But we got a secondary question to this, because you're right. Joel Embiid's opinion is the one that matters. Mm. Joel Embiid said that he called Brian Colangelo and that he believed him when he said that. How long is it going to be before Joel Embiid realized that he just got played?
Listen up, kids. High Noon, 9 a.m. Pacific is brought to you by GEICO. 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance. Yo, welcome back to High Noon, 9 a.m. Pacific, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. Must be nice.
You know how risky it is to be fake Odell Beckham? How are you ever going to get a job with that haircut?
Almost as risky as Tony Kornheiser voicing this show.
Yes. Every day in sports, people say crazy things. Pablo was the first one.
Let's see what we got. That's bleeped up. Next question. Said Tristan Thompson after he was asked if he felt helpless against Steph Curry. But we have video to watch. Let's watch this exchange, please.
No. No. He did a good job. I mean, when I'm switching on, I'm guarding him, so I'm never helpless with no guy in the NBA. That next question.
Thanks, everybody.
Next question. That's the last question.
So here is the question for you, Bo. Is Tristan Thompson right? Was that a bleeped up question?
I don't know if it was a bleeped up question. I know that I personally would feel helpless in that circumstance because I have felt helpless guarding far lesser men than Steph Curry. However, I don't want to be asked that in that moment. Like, what are you supposed to say? Steph Curry can read this. Do you feel helpless out there against him sometimes? Yeah, man, I get caught on that switch, man, and I think I'm about to die. You can't say that out loud. And the person asking that question knows he can't say that out loud.
I feel so much sympathy for Tristan Thompson just because he looks sad. He looks sad, and the question was mean on this level. Tristan Thompson cannot stop Steph Curry, and so this is kind of like asking a dude who is a first responder, like, did you feel helpless against that earthquake?
Right.
Like, yeah, it wasn't really my job, but I got sucked into it, and I have to help save these people's lives, and it was really hard. Yes, thank you.
It's a dangerous game, though, as the media person, if you're, like, trying to tap into a person's vulnerabilities. There are careful ways that you have to navigate
that.
The scrum ain't it, man. Like,
no.
That's not, like, you would have to be a dude that talks to Tristan Thompson all the time. You would have had to cover him when he was in AAU. You'd have to catch him when everybody else was around and just be like, hey, man, I won't put your name on it, but, like, did you feel helpless there? And maybe he'll bare his soul. Otherwise, you're taking me for a sucker.
What a roller coaster, by the way. Tristan Thompson going from stopping Al Horford to the, you know, this and the TMZ stuff. It's all a difficult time in his
life. Yeah, awkward segue into quote number two.
Yeah.
Refs are helping the Warriors. Sarcastically commented Jordan Bell on an Instagram video showing this play where he was called for a foul on LeBron James. Let's watch. All right, here we go. Oh, yeah, I remember this. Pablo, did Jordan Bell have a point?
I love that we're at a time, Bo, where, like, before, you had to dig for stuff like this. You had to dig for quotes from players to criticize officiating or other players. And now we have Jordan Bell, young Jordan Bell, going to Instagram and saying, here is my multimedia presentation about why this stuff is all BS.
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, LeBron got away with one there. That's safe to say.
While I understand what your point is, and you are correct that perhaps LeBron may have gotten away with one, if LeBron were brought on the crime of getting away with one, I am saying that he is acquitted. You know why I'm saying he's acquitted?
What's that? That
stair-step nonsense that's right there on the bottom part of the screen where the dude does the capital letter, then the little letter, then the big letter, all the way across
SpongeBob
the screen.
SpongeBob meme?
That takes too much work, man. If you're willing to put in the effort required to do that, man, for that many words... No, man, no. I don't trust under any circumstance when I see it like that.
That feels like you not trusting the millennial brats, as we've come to call them on our
Actually,
show.
Yes. I think the more accurate thing is me having never seen SpongeBob in my life.
You've never seen SpongeBob?
Why would I do that, Pablo? I'm 37 years
old.
Bob
Ryan saw the SpongeBob musical on Broadway.
Yeah.
You watched the cartoon.
Okay, so you're telling me I should do it because Bob Ryan did it? Like, you're going to have to make up your mind.
That is a slippery slope.
Yeah.
All right, next quote. You're lucky that I knocked myself out. Wrote UFC featherweight Jared Brooks on Twitter after a body slam attempt gone wrong, leading to a knockout win for a man whose name is Shorty Torres.
Wait, what?
We have video.
Hold on. So what you're telling me is that...
That's Shorty Torres being picked up and body slammed.
Okay, so... The man who did the body slamming is the one that caught the one-hitter quitter. Oh, it looked like he was supposed to tuck his chin. Mm. I feel like on things like that, you're supposed to tuck your chin.
So Brooks later taunted Shorty on Twitter, calling him lucky, and he added, quote, if we run that bleep back, I beat you 9 out of 10 times, and the only time you do is me KOing myself. So do you respect the trash talk attempt by Jared Brooks there?
I think he might have a point. Now, I don't know that much about the MMA. I don't know how often certain things happen. But I feel like if you can get yourself into a position where you can pick a dude up over your head and then bring him down like that, you probably are better than the other dude, right? Like, there's a chance here that's why. That's like when Roy Jones hit that dude when he was on his knees. I mean, technically, the other guy won, but then what happened the next time? Roy Jones brought it. I don't know if he'd a Roy Jones or nothing, but I'm just saying, I think he's got a point.
Doesn't this also remind you kind of a scene from one of our favorite movies, a certain martial artist bringing down another man over his knee and breaking him?
Yeah, he didn't even bring him over his knee. Bolo folded him
Bolo.
In half. Bolo put him in his arms and folded the dude in half. And killed him. Now, I mean, this may sound a little grisly, but if there's Bolo-like character in UFC, I might start watching it just a little bit more. Bolo, the most intimidating man in the history of the martial arts.
I have a special sympathy for any guy named Shorty Torres. I would just advise him to just claim that he made him do this.
It's also not a terrible surprise that a man named Shorty Torres likes to fight.
Not at all.
Yeah, you go say something to Shorty Torres, see what happens back. Male, though, you can body slam him. All right, next quote. I'm not going to be treated like bleep, said Johnny Manziel after getting into it with a Toronto Argonauts player in his first preseason game with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Let's take a listen.
Listen, I'm not here to be pushed over. You can come at me because my name's in the papers, because my name's on TV. You can come at me. I'm not backing down. I'm here for a reason. I'm here to play ball. I'm not going to be treated like shit. So it is what it is. It's football. People talk a little bit out there. It is what it is, but just know I'm not backing down.
Pablo, are you surprised Johnny Manziel isn't getting more respect in the CFL?
I am not. I also think that this is kind of tame for Johnny Manziel, and I say that not because I'm numb to expletives like the one he used, but just that expletives aren't the problem for him. What's the problem for him is whether he's good at football. Like, the NFL isn't looking at Johnny Manziel and saying to themselves, man, is this guy going to stop cursing? Is he going to stop standing up for himself? That's not the issue. The issue is the stuff on tape. Like, does he seem legit? Because the hot-headedness can be tolerated in that sport.
Yeah, but think about it, though. This is still a football team that has its own stuff, and these are the things that we talk about around the football team, right? So, yeah, I mean, I get why he's saying that. That should be his response, because he's in an unfortunate situation. He is not necessarily the best player in the CFL. He is probably not the best player in the CFL, but he is the most famous person in the CFL.
No question.
And I don't know necessarily how well all the CFL players, like how much information they know about one another. I don't really know what the media machine is that's around the CFL. But if you enjoy trash talk, Johnny Manziel's the guy to talk to, because you actually know who that dude is. I don't know how much information you got on the wide receiver over there, but Johnny Manziel, I know you on TMZ.
Correct.
That'll get you trash talk.
I do believe they have Twitter in Canada. I do believe they have social media there. Oh. They know what Johnny Manziel is up to.
They know him, so he's going to be the one that gets the business every time, because he's the dude that they know. But like the dude that plays center for them,
he's
playing
slams.
In peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least it's just about the game, not about his life.
There's Crispy, and then there's Crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Going pretty well.
Yeah. Gotta pee, though.
Oh, that's awkward. Pablo, we have to talk about this Serena Williams story. I mean, I feel like we should put Maria Sharapova's name in it, but I don't really feel like she's earned her place in the marquee in talking about this, right? Sharapova and Serena were supposed to play today. Serena withdrew. She has a pectoral injury. There's an 18-match winning streak that Serena had against Maria Sharapova, but I keep seeing people say it got snapped by this, which seems to be a liberal definition of the term snapped. But the question, Pablo, that I throw to you in this one is, are we really still calling this a rivalry? Because I think there's arguments on both sides.
I feel like it is a rivalry in the cultural sense, in the sense that they both are stand-ins for certain archetypes. And what I find interesting is not the athletic element of it, because you're right, this isn't close at all, really. It's that Maria Sharapova is supposed to be the beauty, the supermodel-esque beauty, and Serena Williams is supposed to be the brawn. And we have been seeing complications on that rivalry for years now, and yet somehow that is the narrative that sticks.
Well, they also really don't seem to like each other.
They also definitely don't like each other.
Now, it is a rivalry, and the only reason I say that it is a rivalry because it reminds me of another famous rivalry, and that's the one between the Globetrotters and the Generals, right? You know, they keep playing each other all the time. They get up like every single time. You know, that's what it happens to be. Yeah, okay, cool. That is a rivalry, but the way we got here in the first place is, when you have someone dominant, we got to put somebody else alongside you. Like, that's what we do. Like, Federer and Nadal, they gave it to us organically. They forced this with Sharapova because she won those first two matches against Serena Williams.
Early
and
on.
Once it was there, it was like, okay, Like, you remember David Duvall? Like, we tried to do that with Tiger Woods. We tried it with Sergio Garcia. We keep doing it with Sharapova, but the difference is Sharapova keep coming out there and getting smoked, keeps coming out and getting smoked, where I don't even think we think it's a rivalry anymore. It's just kind of interesting to talk about the two of them, but nobody thinks they're equals or like peers at this point.
The press conference that Serena held this week before withdrawing was what it had a spotlight on it that I thought was deserved, because it was basically asking, you know, were you ever intimidated by how beautiful Maria Sharapova is, right? There was this real long-winded question by a journalist who wanted to ask this for 14 years involving the president and blah, blah, blah. But the real truth of it is Maria Sharapova is the beauty. But Maria Sharapova is also the one of these two with a PED scandal, right?
She is. Now, let's be clear that we're putting heavy air quotes on beauty, because I can take it around my way and ask which one the beauty is. the answers are going to vary, but that's also part of why this winds up
being compelling in
terms of discussion. I have to read this quote, though, that Serena gave in her, when she withdrew here about doing this. She says, "It's very difficult because I love playing Maria. It's a match I always get up for. Her game matches up so well against mine." Translation, I've been smoking her for almost 15 years. She smoked Maria Sharapova at the Olympics, and if I recall, crip walk after she got done. I mean, it's not like she beats her just a little bit.
I love that.
She beats the brakes off of her. And that's why you can't say this is not a rivalry, because Serena sure treats it like it's a rivalry.
And imagine why Serena might take it to another level when it comes to animosity. Serena Williams has been on the cover of all of these fashion magazines. Serena Williams, despite being the brawn, was at the royal wedding. Serena Williams is a darling of high fashion, and still she must be asked by some people about whether she's intimidated by Maria Sharapova on the looks and the attractiveness scale, which is infuriating.
And Maria Sharapova called her a homewrecker at a press conference once.
Yes.
Not in those words, but she did do that.
And there was that book Sharapova wrote in which she talked about Serena crying after the match, which was also not so cool according to the code of tennis, apparently.
Well, just generally, it sounded like she was snitching. And it comes off bad because, as we've talked about it, she's been getting the brakes beat off of for 15 years.
Yeah.
Bye-ya.
They're off. Good start. Cage fighter, both of these nuts. They come away together. Both of these nuts goes for the front. Has it by a long neck. Cage fighter not going away easily. And DF Dynasty 3 Green right there running third outside. Bang, bang, you're gone. Making some headway. Final 100 yards for both of these nuts. Cage fighter trying to battle back. Both of these nuts. Cage fighter, both of these nuts rolling to victory by a head over cage fighter.
Shout out to Banger Banger.
$7.20 is the number. That's what this horse, whose name I am not allowed to mention, that's what it paid to win on Friday night at Remington Park in Oklahoma City. We hadn't planned on talking horse racing a lot, but I feel like that's changing now.
Yo, I used to go to Remington Park with my aunt when I was younger because there wasn't that much to do in Oklahoma City, and we would bet on the horses, and I don't understand why this horse wasn't around in 1989, because that was what I needed in my life. That was it.
Can we really not say the name of the horse?
Pablo's.
Is that a no?
We just got here. Dude, okay. Let's go to the number.
That guy said
it. Yourself fired. 5 for 5. That's a Steph Curry shot from three after this confrontation with Kendrick Perkins, because Perk refused to move his legs. Let's watch.
You know what I'm talking about? Iggy.
All right, there's Perk.
Throws it up, and that will end the third quarter. Cavaliers start of the.
There's Perk jumping up. Like, I do kind of feel like, though, for Perk to jump up, like, against Steph Curry. Come on, man. You could have handled that from your chair. Now,
yeah,
Pablo, are we sure having Perk on the bench is helping the Cavs more than it's helping? Because after this, Steph was on fire.
I like Kendrick Perkins. I like that. That is what Kendrick Perkins must be like on the subway. Like, the man spreading, just getting real comfortable on that bench. But this is truly terrifying to the people like that trainer I mentioned in our A block, who worry about Steph Curry. Like, this is all fun and games until Steph Curry trips over Kendrick Perkins and twists his ankle. So I kind of get why this is a devious strategy that Kendrick Perkins might want to employ. Clearly, though, it just made Hulk smash.
Well, hold on, though. It is a devious strategy, and the only reason the devious strategy works is that Steph Curry is trying to stunt in front of the bench, right? Our humble superstar. These are the things that we don't talk about here. We are talking about whether Steph Curry should be able to walk backward in front of their bench in that way and turn coolly without looking where he's going. Like, you're supposed to afford him that? Is that what it is?
He is a wildly arrogant person on the court. There is no question about that. But you raise a good point. I kind of love that this is a sport where this happens.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is more fun than the NFL special teams coach, like, sticking his knee out. No, this is the glory of the NBA. You might run into a guy who looks like an Egyptian pharaoh on the bench accidentally.
And also, let's give the man a little credit for being huge, right?
He's just very large.
That is giant man sitting on the bench and apparently has to wear tennis shoes, which is the sign that my body aches.
Lumbar support. All right, next number. 0. That is how many endorsements Pat Mahomes accepted during his rookie year, because he didn't want to star in commercials before he stars on the field. Well, Monty Jones, do you respect this young man's decision?
Does this look of respect? Are you getting any indication of respect here? No, it is not something that I respect. Now, if you want to make the argument that you're like trying to manage your brand just a little bit and be prepared for what happens if you don't play well and you don't want to fall off by halfway, get it. So if I got bad news for you, bro, you can donate your entire salary to charity. If you go out there and stink it up, they're going to treat you like you stunk it up. And nobody's going to be like, well, hold on, fellas. He wasn't on any billboards or anything like that. That's a con. Get this bread while this bread is there to be gotten. Maybe you'll get some more money on this because this is local endorsements as much as anything else, right? Maybe you'll pull that off. But no, there is nothing noble about turning down honest money.
Well, I do want to know what the endorsements were, because if this is for those like local furniture stores, then maybe this was just a good branding decision.
Those commercials
in general.
They're so delightful.
They are delightful, but would you want to star in a local furniture store commercial?
How much? I once did commercials for the bus. Local transit. I once did commercials for local transit.
You advertise?
I advertise for the bus. You're damn right.
What was the ad?
And if the bus calls tomorrow, there's going to be a segment of this show called Toot Toot.
Wait.
Because we're going to take that bread. I'm not passing up on his money.
Please. Show me what that ad kind of looked
like. I did radio ads for the bus, making people aware of the transit authority. Like, yo.
The bus needed an ad?
Dude, yes, the bus. Sorry, not everywhere is like New York, Pablo. Some places people have cars and stuff. Not everybody has to do that.
Public transportation, I guess. Yeah, not as popular in other places.
Nah, I forgot that. I thought you knew a little bit more about the world. We can't all be sophisticated now, can we? All right, next number is 28. Days between assists for Cavs point guard Jordan Clarkson, who last night got his first one since May 7th. Over that stretch, he went 16 for 56 from the field and 6 for 21 from three. Pablo, what exactly is he good for?
This hurts me, and you know why it hurts.
Tell him why it hurts.
It hurts me because Jordan Clarkson is the only, and I think the first NBA player of Filipino heritage. And he regularly gets BOFA'd basically every night. It's really sad. Like, Jordan Clarkson, I wanted to get behind him. I wanted to get behind the cause. I wanted to trumpet him on my first TV show. And instead, I am clowning on him because he looks so, so lost.
You were the trumpeter. Instead, he getting the kazoo. I have said, and I still don't understand how this works. Like, maybe there's really a different way that you consume basketball when you watch it when you're sleepy. Because when I would stay up and watch those late-night West Coast games, he seemed like a pretty decent player. Mm. He has just been flat-out awful this whole postseason. It is bizarre how bad he is. And they have to play him. The thing about this is, and this is what you can't hold against him, you can't really at this point hold it against him that he's playing like he's sorry, because he's not asking to play. They call and they bring him in.
He has to play his way out of the hole he's in. The problem, I think, is that he's on that Kobe system.
Yeah, sometimes you just
played with Kobe, he's still on that Kobe system. All right. Last number. 1. The run scored in the last 29 innings for the Philadelphia Phillies, and it was a home run by pitcher Jake Arrieta, leading Arrieta to fume, quote, "I'm so furious. We had bad defensive shifts. We're the worst in the league in shifts. I worked too hard for this bleep. We need some accountability all around. If there is not, I'll make sure there is." So should Arrieta be angry at his stats-obsessed manager, Gabe Kapler?
I don't know how you picked out the one guy to decide who he should be angry at in the course of this. I would also note that in some ways, starting pitchers are like the wide receivers of baseball, because they are dependent in a lot of ways for what goes on around them. And I would imagine if the only way we can score is if I do it myself, right? I think he might have been mad already. Okay, that's what it is. But the fact that he had to go get the run himself and bring it home, that's the next level of fury that he had. I don't know if there's a manager being mad at the matter or being mad at the manager, because I don't feel like you can blame the manager and the shifts and the stats for the fact they scored one run in the last 29 innings.
Yes, but I do worry, though, because I, as you also know, am in favor. I like these broadcasters who are, like, analytically data-driven, who get a shot to prove themselves in the big leagues. And I do feel like because you cannot fire all the players, Gabe Kapler will have to answer for this.
Yeah.
And there is something about the shifts. I'm not a shift expert, but I certainly know that Gabe Kapler is aggressive on those moves. And if your starting pitcher is picking that as one of his hills that he wants you to die on, that is not a good omen.
But the other thing, though, if you're a starting pitcher and the manager does go to a shift and the shift does not work, you do, in fact, have to be furious. Like, the
well,
ball
on you. No,
if the ball goes somewhere where somebody's supposed to be, except you think you've outsmarted the Matrix.
Right.
Like, I mean, that is a legitimate place to be just bonkers mad.
There's no stat that adjusts for pitchers who had a bad shift.
No, there's not. There's
just
not.
Your ERA.
There's not. There's just another batter coming.
Pardon the interruption, but High Noon, 9 a.m. Pacific, is brought to you by Outback Steakhouse. Aussie rules.
We made it.
We're almost there. Almost there. In closing, I would like to talk about how to handle a Nazi tattoo controversy. Andrea Lee is a UFC fighter, and thanks to this photo she posted over the weekend, we learned that her coach and husband, Donnie Aaron, has a swastika tattoo that he got in prison. It's over there on the left arm. Here was her eventually deleted explanation, which I find especially relevant to us, Bo. Quote, "Neither one of us are racists. We have an Asian and a black guy that live with us. Oh my gosh, guys, it's a tattoo he got when he was in prison. Get over yourselves. He covers them up all the time, and we happen to have a lake day, and it makes an appearance. Sensitive, bleep, bleep, bleeps."
And it's amazing if she ran away for what would have been the one plausible excuse. You got to do what you got to do to survive inside, you know, right? Like, I was either going to kick it with them or the Muslims. That was the story they could have told. The fact that they couldn't even go to that means, come on, man. Like, that's what's going on here.
Also, I have an alternative solution. Get the tattoo removed.
Well, yes. I think some people have, like, principled approaches to tattoos.
Yeah,
like,
but if your principled approach involves a swastika tattoo, yeah, I feel like, yeah, you could go to the tattoo parlor and be like, hey, you know what? She said she has an Asian guy and a black guy living with her. Make the tattoo our logo.
And how about this?
Transform it.
Can we get an interview with the Asian and black guy who live with
them? Great call.
Because I have all kinds of questions about what it is.
Investigative journalism.
Yeah, like, what do you have to let slide in order to live with them? What kind of discount on the rent is you walking around and a dude got a swastika tattoo that you got to look at all the time? Like, we did an interview once with somebody that had a Confederate flag ring on, and it was like, man, how am I supposed to be looking at this? I mean, I live with him. Like, the interview was over.
I just like that the alternate name for our show could have been Racist Tattoo Insurance.
Yeah, there we are. In closing, the fun of the Drake Pusha T beef is over. Yesterday on radio, Rap-A-Lot Records CEO Jay Prince said, quote, "I made an OG call to Drake this morning telling him, I don't want you to respond to this. That means it's a wrap. We can go to the scorecards now." Who won? We won, because we got a great rap beef, if only for a week. There's a better chance of Biggie and Tupac dissing each other this week than Drake and Push. That one is done. And it was great as it happened.
It was. But this is 100,000,000% done, even if Drake apparently has, like, this thing that he was going to release, maybe, right? There have been reports that, oh, he had something prepared, but nope, all agree that it's over.
Nah, my guess is that this is over. Like, if Pusha T decides to do something after this, he hates Drake even more than we thought. Like, there's a dedication, because that's the thing that has blown my mind about this more than anything else. He hates Drake so much. Like, I think a lot of people our age like to kind of laugh and joke about hating Drake. No. Ain't no humor in this one for him.
Pusha T is a method actor. At the very least, he looks like one to me. I don't know if he truly hates Drake, but he certainly hates Drake with all of his heart and soul right now.
Think about that last song. How many of those things were actually jokes? Like, the things that you laughed at, how many of them were actually jokes?
Yuck. Was yuck a joke?
Yeah. People might say that about this show also, though. It's like, I was laughing at them, but I mean, I don't think they were trying for it.